It's Wednesday, the 18th of January, and you're listening to the Red Army Roundup. I'm your host, Paul Hinton, and as ever, I'm joined by Sean Phillips and Aaron Wren. Hello there, gents.
Hello there, Paul.
Good evening, Paul.
And we're back with a packed episode this week. We're going to look back at the Devils' overtime loss to the Giants, have a little bit talk around the squad and your Ramite suggestions, a bit of a look around the league in Sheffield, in Nottingham, and then all of the fallout of the board meeting that's come out today, you know, specifically looking at the announcement that Guildford have applied to join the league, before previewing our gaming on this weekend, away to Coventry, and a massive table-topping clash home to Sheffield. So without further ado, we'll get going. Saturday night, Belfast came into town, and with the Devils missing Patrick Bordalo, I think there was quite a lot of concern around the fan base that Belfast would run roughshod over us, and it looked like that was their plan very early on when, you know, just a couple of seconds in, Matt Nicholson puts a late hit on Matt Myers down in front of the Devils bench, and Mark Lewis offers him out in what was a, you know, a good fight from Lewis, got the crowd up, but took forever to get started. It was a good fight, Sean, but do you think the linesman should let players skate around in a circle for as long as that, or you know, just
it was a bit of a slow start, really, wasn't it? I think the fight was going to happen, and it's hard to say. I think the linesman knew it was going to come at some stage in the game. So, do you stop it then and risk another outburst later, or do you just get it out of the way first? So, yeah, I can see why they let it carry on, and ultimately, it was good for the crowd as well.
Definitely, and you know, Lewis, you took the win in the fight. You probably quite comfortably and really gave the crowd a lift, and the Devils played a fantastic first period, I thought, summed up by the bullet of a goal scored by Matt Myers after 11 minutes. And, you know, not going to see many sweeter shots from, you know, from outside the point, Aaron.
No, exactly. It was just an absolute ripper from the point. I think it took a little bit of a deflection, but either way, you know, I don't think any player, fan, goalie, ref seen the puck leave his stick or end up in the back of the net. It was just light was on and a black puck in the goal, and it was just a bullet. I haven't seen a shot like that for a while.
Yeah, and no more than the Devils deserve to be leading in that first period, and it was really nice at the end of the period, I thought, Sean, to be able to talk about how the fact that we'd started a game really well and strongly.
Yeah, and it was a good game as well. It was end-to-end. We didn't dominate it by any means, but we were strong, we were competitive, we were battling for every loose puck. It wasn't as if Belfast were the first to every puck and we were lucky to have the lead or anything like that. They took it to us, and they gave us a good game in that first period, and they were still right in the mix. At the end of the period, to only be one up, you'd think that was probably a fair reflection of how it was going. We had the slight edge and just had the better of the scoring opportunities.
Yeah, definitely made most of the chances after being outshot by the Giants a little bit. Second period started even better with Patrick Aslin getting the goal 5 minutes in with a rebound off Joey Martin that he managed to bury to give the Devils a two-goal advantage. But started to get the impression that we just need to stop going two goals up because it's really not good for us. Two-goal gaps in general. We go two goals down before we win games, so we go two goals up and then it all goes a bit wrong. A couple of minutes later, Blair Riley gets the goal back for the Giants. And by the end of the second period, even though the scorecard only shows Giants having five shots in that second, I felt the momentum had completely swung, Sean. And by the end of the second, thought we were looking at, you know, a clinging on third period.
Pushing on and clinging. Score. Yeah, pushing on. Well, at some stage before the Giants even scored their equalising goal, Jonathan Boxhill ripped one. I think the pass was going to Mike Quinnell in the slot and completely stepped out of the way of it for Boxhill to get on the end of it. And Bounds was feigned by the pass going a little bit, you know, it went a little bit further than he initially thought and got his angles all mixed up on that one. And Boxhill just pulls an absolute ripper into the back of the net, and before that even went in, you and I looked at each other and just said, the way that second period was, we keep it going like that, we're not going to win this game. and we continue playing that way, and the Giants got themselves back into it to cling at least 1 point from the game.
Yeah, and I just, it was, so we talked about how the Devils, you sort of switch on a bit late in the game when they go behind. And I felt that about halfway through the third period, Aaron, that we suddenly seemed to wake up again and thought, God, we're at risk of losing this game. We need to go hard. And I don't know whether it was a decision. We were playing with it. Obviously, Patrick Bordler was missing. We were playing with a bit of a shorter bench, not running the fourth line as much. Was that a decision to try and save energy, or is it a mentality thing that's just in the team that shouldn't, you know, there's not, they're not being told to do it, it's just happening?
Yeah, it seems to be a regular occurrence for this team. You know, last couple of weeks it's been the same story, and like the games that we've won previously, it's all been down to the third period where we decide to turn up, and that Belfast game was no different story. We started well, dipped, and then we tried to finish well, and it just didn't happen for us. And you know, playing that type of style against a team like Belfast, you're very, very rarely going to come out with a win, and we was lucky to come out with a point, if I'm honest, because that first 10 minutes in the third period, if they scored another one, we would have been out of there, and that would have been the end of the game. But we managed to play that a little bit better and get a point out of it. But we need to do something different. You know, we can't just rely on the last 10 minutes of the third period to win games, and if we want to win the league, that's not the way to go about it.
Sean, what's your take on it? Do you think it's why it's happening? Is it that Andrew Lord perhaps is telling the team to try and conserve some energy for the last 10 minutes and it's going too far? Or is it just a mentality thing in the team? You know, it just seems bizarre that it keeps happening for it not to be a plan. But if it is a plan, that also seems bizarre.
Yeah, it's weird because you listen to Andrew Lord's post-game interview, and he mentions that in the game there were passengers. And I think through the, you know, since day one there's been passengers in this team, and you know, we're not going to name names, but players have underperformed, and where this mentality of going for it or gunning for it in the last 15 minutes when we realise we're in danger of losing a game is not the form of a championship winning side. But given, you know, saying that, Belfast are an exceptional team. They're a very, very good side. They pressed us hard to everything. They came in with a game plan. They played a good road game. They got pucks deep, put a lot of rubber on the net, and took the chances they had. Blair Riley is an exceptional signing. I'm very, very jealous of him having, of Belfast having him in their lineup, because he's a top, top player. And you look at someone like Chris Higgins, who's playing down the lines a bit in Belfast this year, but massively clutch for him in the overtime and got an assist on another one of the goals. So it's, I think we were met with a very, very good opposition. That's one problem. But the recurring theme is that we are leaving it too late to get back into games. And we've been out of form for, I think, 3-4 weeks going on to it now. We had a great third period against Coventry the day after Boxing Day, where we thought it was the start of a resurgence in the lineup. And we just seem to have dipped back off to where we were before Christmas.
Yeah, we played well against Dundee, but you know, perhaps not the best barometer, given that they were still struck with a few injuries at the time. I think you mentioned the passengers, the fact that we're leaving things late, we're not playing for 60 minutes, and how good Belfast are. It's just so frustrating that we still took them to overtime. We were still within, you know, hardly anything of winning that game. Mm. And talking about the problems in the team, it just showed and the quality is there.
Of course, yeah. And if we'd played well, we'd have got the points in regulation and gained another two on Belfast instead of dropping one off on them.
Yeah. First, you know, slightly tempered by the fact that Belfast did drop a point to Dundee the following night, which you probably didn't see coming. So Belfast played one more game on the weekend than us and gained two more points. So yeah, we just about sort of came out neutral against them. So it's not the end of the world. We've still got, you know, if you took out all games in hand, still got a 3-point cushion. But, you know, and that's still pretty much where it's been. We've never gone above, I think, a 4-point cushion over Sheffield, at least, once you take out their games in hand. So we're talking about how we're out of form. We are still picking up points. But you just think that gap could be so much more if we were just playing more consistently.
For sure, yeah.
So yeah, very frustrating at the moment. You mentioned, obviously, in the overtime, the goal came from a mistake from a D-man, and everyone sort of jumps on it instantly. But I think it's just the nature of
3-on-3
hockey. Only was at the end of a long shift, but when a team's on a breakaway, you can hardly skate over to the bench to have your change. He had to get back behind the net, and I know a few people have said he shouldn't have tried turning out of it. He should have dumped the puck, but...
But you turn out of it, you have your two forwards on a one-man break, and you have a good 2-on-1 in OT. Just completely the nature of it.
If you're looking for a break and you dump the puck around the boards, who's likely to pick it up? It's going to be the opposition rushing forward. You're just going to have another attempt. So you wouldn't want to be a defenseman in 3-on-3, I think.
Well, Andrew Hawthorne was the big villain in the Coventry game. So, yeah, the defensemen in the 3-on-3 haven't got the best reputation at the moment.
There's only one of you, and everyone is thinking score. Everyone on your team's thinking score, and everyone against you is thinking it. So,
yeah,
bit of a struggle. Obviously, only the one game this week, so Player of the Week is effectively an overblown man of the match. But we're still going to call it Player of the Week because, you know, why wouldn't we? Sean, let's ask you first. Who do you think was out?
Joey Haddad.
For a change.
Just worked his bag off, went to the net, unlucky on a couple of chances, and just gave it his all night. One of the only players who can say that he didn't give up during that game. And that's all you ask of a Cardiff Devil. So, yeah, my Player of the Week.
Aaron, your selection is?
Exactly the same, Paul. There's not a lot you can say about him except for his work rate is absolutely exceptional. Plays fantastic every night and basically didn't put a foot wrong. You know, he got a lot of pucks on net, did a lot of things right, and it's a little bit gutting when you see someone like him play so well and try so hard, and you've got other players that coast in the team. So, I picked Joey Dags. He's just been phenomenal from the moment we picked him up.
I do want to give a special mention to Mark Lewis, who I think that fight really set the tone. And I think Belfast were looking to come in and bully us, and probably would have done if no one had stood up to Nickerson right at the start. Joey Haddad for the whole game just doesn't stop. He's going to score one of those toe drag goals eventually. He keeps trying it. But he looks a lot more offensive as well at the moment. He's driving the net more. Seems to be making a few more chances and getting a few more shots off. So, definitely a guy who's just seems to be getting better and better as well. So, another unanimous Player of the Week in Joey Haddad. So, congratulations. Whilst we're still on the topic of the Devils and this weekend, but possibly a little bit more general than just this game, but we've touched on people coasting, you're possibly some passengers in the team at the moment. Where do you both stand on a new addition? I think there's obviously good chemistry in the locker room. We've had it for the entire time under Andrew Lord. Everyone said how good that's been. Would you look to bring someone in on top of that, or do you think it's time to actually cut someone? We've gone 2.5 years without cutting. Is it time to have that little ruthless edge and make a decision, or would you just be looking to pad the squad out if the budget was there for it?
It's kind of a yeah for both, because I do think we need to get rid of someone, not to let someone come into the team, just because they're not playing Cardiff Devils hockey, they're not putting 100% in, or it's just not working out at the moment for them. And so yeah, definitely think we should get rid of someone just to maybe put a little boot up some other players' asses, and maybe they'll stop playing to their potential, and this team might actually play to the potential we all think they can do. But as for signing someone else, I think it done us good last year when we signed Gleeson Fournier and Ryan Russell. I know we didn't come up with anything that year, but they did make a big difference and helped us lose the league, kind of thing. But they're both fantastic players, and we kept Gleeson. And the year before, we signed Mark Mutatnin, who was I wouldn't say clutch, but his vision in the game was fantastic. You know, he was, in my opinion, he was just an old Patrick Asselin kind of thing, just didn't have the legs. But, you know, I think an addition would be key. I can't say I know who, because I'm not a scout, but I do think we need a goal scorer, a prolific goal scorer. And I think as soon as we start scoring goals, it'll be a different team.
Sean, where do you sit on it? Is it time for the Devils to grow ruthless edge and just show that this isn't a, you know, 7-month trip to the UK, regardless of how you play?
I think it is. I think we've been a bit too nice at times over the last 2 years. At stages, like Aaron said, the addition of Marku Chatanen, of his vision, just he brought something different to a team that was a little bit flat. Ryan Russell, the same thing. We were down a body. We needed something fresh, a new ideas. Someone who brought something a little bit different. I've seen a couple of people mention that we're missing a rink rat, a Zach Avato style player. I don't buy that. I don't see that we're missing. I think we're missing a bit of a rat, someone in the Jailer Tulip sort of mould, possibly Havato, but do I think it would improve our results? No. I think it would entertain a little bit more, and we'd look like we were trying, or it would help in that department. It would be more entertaining. Do I think it would give us better results? No, I don't. I'm in the same boat as Aaron. I think we need we've got that big power forward in Patrick Bordlow. He just needs to get himself going. A couple of goals here or there would do him the world of good for some confidence, some power play time maybe, but ultimately we're lacking in goal scoring. And you wouldn't have thought it, given that Sean Bedivoglio, Lane Ulmer are right up there in the scoring charts. But it's...
Not in the goal scoring, though. You know, it's interesting.
Not in the goal scoring. In the overall points of it, they seem to be up there, but I just don't see... where we can, we just need someone clutch. We need someone clutch and someone to come up and score a big game with. Someone like David Rutherford. He's that dirt, you know, that Zach Avato guy. But the guy will score goals as well. He'll score points. He'll create plays for you. Someone like David Rutherford is what this team is missing in my eyes. A little bit of a chirp artist. Someone to lift the team when they're a bit down, and someone who just grab the game by the nuts. Tyler Mosienko, someone like that. Grab the game by the nuts and go and win it yourself if you are going to do it. And when I win the game myself, you're going to jump on and you'll be doing it next time. The team needs something fresh.
Yeah, hard to disagree with that. And you know, for me, the biggest thing is though, I just would like to see a change. I think the last 2 years where we've brought a player in, we've pretty much dropped an important, you know, Jesse Mitchum in the first year hardly played after Marku Chatanen came in. Trevor Hendricks then very rarely played for whatever reasons. Yeah, I suppose Hendricks and Culligan alternated a little bit more than that, but I think that I didn't very rarely agreed with that decision. But especially in the Jesse Mitchum mold, the guy just didn't get the ice time, and then we tried to throw him right in at the end after Kelly's injury, and he was cold. Do you think, well, why did we bother keeping him? Why are we putting the money to him at the time? You know, there may not have been a reason to gas him, it was just he wasn't getting the team for whatever reason, but I just think there's this bit of comfortableness around the Devils at the moment that, you know, no one's really looking over their shoulder wondering if they're going to be given their 2 weeks' notice at any moment. I think they all just think we're here until April regardless. And yeah, and that, you know, it's not even conscious sometimes. I think that type of thing just seeps into your mind subconsciously, and you just end up giving that. It could only be 5% less, but yeah, that can be really big in your tight games.
And in title winning teams as well.
Yeah, it's the fine margins that win things. And if you've got one guy every now and again just letting his mind slip, I don't know, I don't necessarily think it's only one guy at the moment, but that really can be the difference between those couple of, that point or two that push you into second or third place.
Mm.
Well, that's that. I think we've had quite a few of your Ramite suggestions in this week, now that we're back in remembering to tweet about it. So thank you to everyone. And Sean, the social media correspondent, as he is now known, will run through them.
Yeah, the first one we had was from John Smith, who was a Belfast fan, who tweeted us a gif of Chris Higgins' goal, saying that was what he loved about the weekend. So Thanks for that, John. Greg?
As we're on there, sorry, just totally off. So, and it may just be that I'm a bit of a sore loser, but when I saw Chris Higgins been walking across our ice, I did just think, someone go and fill him in. And no, I don't know whether that's a bad thing, but I saw it and I thought, not a few of that.
I thought it was class.
You play that badly? You play well, they don't score the goal, he doesn't celebrate.
Yeah, I'm just a sore loser then.
If I've seen Doucette or someone else do that in the away arena, oh my God, party in my pants.
Moving quite swiftly on from the party in Aaron's pants, Greg Hewish said there wasn't much to love, sadly. He hated that Belfast seemed to have more intensity in the third when this was our only game of the weekend. And we also had one from Martin Jenkins, loved Haddad. What a handful he's been lately. In my opinion, we're missing a sniper, too many playmakers. Derek Farr said he hated losing, loved Matthew Myers' bullet goal. Moving on, we had Tracy Martin saying she loved the first period, didn't like the second and third, and the fact that Andrew Lord was not playing. Ashley at @uncle_puck2 said he loved how he got in their faces and went 2-0 up. Hated when the annual season choke started to kick in. We also had one from Danielle McCarthy who said, loved that Lewis stepped up for the team. Hated that Andrew Lord is still in his suit. I so want him to play, but understand why he's on the bench doing his job. Just think he's an outstanding player. We had one from Kenwyn Jones. He was loved watching four-line hockey. Hate not being able to watch it in Cardiff. And lastly, we had Tony Dickin, who said he loved Mark Lewis's toughness and skating ability. Hates losing in overtime. So thank you, as Paul said, to everyone for sending in your armites.
And, yeah, it does sound quite a lot like we've all just stolen our opinions from Martin Jenkins' armite suggestion this week.
We didn't.
What the last 20 minutes have been, so you know, good work on that one. Yes, if you can keep sending your armites in, just so we can fill up the conversation with your thoughts, replay them as ours as we have done, yeah, that would be excellent. No, but we do love hearing your suggestions for this, so make sure you keep tweeting them as we go through this weekend. Talking about hating things, Steelers ownership we're going to move on to next. They became quite unpopular quite quickly, as we discussed last week, and I would imagine their game in Sheffield saw a little bit of a drop in their 50-50 take-ins, because they very swiftly turned around and said, oh, we're so sorry, we didn't mean it, you can have your travel back. I think it's good that they've turned around, but it's another leaf in just a bizarre film of the Elite League that needs to be made one day. Sean, and I saw a lot of people tweeting, oh, if you do stop buying 50-50 tickets, et cetera, you're just going to hurt the team. And very similar conversations were had around people stopping going the outside things with Paul Reagan years ago. But do you think it just shows that the league don't really, a lot of the league perhaps, don't really listen to fans unless all of a sudden there's a threat to their pocket?
Fan power is so big. And I feel like Sheffield fans should still do that just once, just one week in the arena, just to prove how much fan power that they really do have. And you talk about the outside with Paul Reagan. Look where it got us, ultimately. You know, we didn't know that that was going to happen, but ultimately it got us not single-handedly that sort of protest, but the whole mentality of it, the people involved, were quite instrumental in getting us where we are today. I feel like if people hadn't stopped going and just kept putting money into it, Paul Reagan would still be here today. That's a horrible thought.
I genuinely don't think Paul Reagan would be here, but I think that's more to do with the fact that none of it would be here, but there we go.
Okay, yeah, fair point, yeah. But just proves that fan power is ultimately the biggest thing. If you lose your fans, you've got nothing. I think the decision was made because he realised it was going to hurt him in his pocket. I don't think he really cares about the fans all that much. I feel like he just realised it was going to hit him where it hurt, and that was his pocket. Steelers should still do it at least once, twice, now and again, periodically, to remind him just how important they are to that club.
Now and again, just to remind them.
I would. Yeah.
Yeah, so people, it's a Sheffield money that's losing.
People forget things very quickly.
Yeah, it's true. And I think it's your big point when if Sheffield are getting so much money through that 50-50 at the moment, and that's all through fan buy-in. And, you know,
yeah, well, it's obviously half it. You know, it's half, probably half their wage cap. What is it? Is it 10 grand regularly? Even if
the Boxing Day, it's $5,000-$6,000.
Even if it's $5,000, you know, that's a big chunk of your wage. I know they have a big rent bill, but you know, that's a fair amount of money.
Oh yeah, it's a ridiculous amount of money for a club to be taking in for nothing. You know, they're getting that money for absolutely for free on top of everything else. So
yeah.
It's excellent and just good that the Steelers fans have got that ace up their sleeve, if you like.
I was just about to say, it doesn't stop them going to a game, but they can just pull their 50-50 money.
And that's probably going to have more of an impact on them than not going to the game, because most are probably season ticket holders anyway. So Well done to the Steelers fans, I think, is the takeaway from that.
Definitely.
And whilst we're saying well done, I think a massive congratulations to the Nottingham Panthers, who have won the Continental Cup this weekend. An amazing achievement. The lowest ranked team to make it to the final. No British team has won it before. You're totally not expected to win it. And they won it comfortably in the end, winning all three of their group games to take the Continental Cup plate, which was obviously the Continental Cup would have a plate as the award at the end of it. Good news, I think an extra CHL spot, which hasn't been confirmed, but is more than likely.
I think it is confirmed. The winner of the Continental Cup got automatic qualification to the Champions Hockey League.
I think the spot for the Elite League hasn't been confirmed, because that's usually how the league ones are dished out, is usually decided later. So it may be that we don't get a second one for the league winner. Oh, imagine if Sheffield won the league and Nottingham got it instead. That'd be hilarious. Not for the fact that we didn't win the league. Aaron, though, got to be good for the prestige, the image of the league, seeing an Elite League team take a big European competition like that.
Well, exactly, Paul. If you think about it, you know, as you said, they were the lowest ranked team in the in the final, and they played quite well in the group stages as well, beating quite teams that ranked way above them, and you know, it just puts the Elite League on the map. You know, I listened to Patrick Bordlow's interview from one of the intermissions on Sunday, and he said the standard of this league is way above the ECHL, and we could compete mid-table in the AHL. So that just proves how good the standard of this league is going, and it's nice that a team like Nottingham done us a favour and put the Elite League on the map, saying, you know, we can do it, we can beat teams and we can win competitions. It's not like the CHL where we send a team and they get smashed 9-1 every game. You know, Nottingham done us proud and done the league proud and won them a trophy, so well done to them.
Probably the biggest night in their club's history, I think, to go and win a competition like that.
Massive, and just the fans that were there for the final, you know, especially ones that had made it to the two previous group stages. You think the money that they must have spent in doing that, but just to be there for that must have been something special. So
sure.
Congratulations. That's quite enough being nice to Nottingham now. Moving on. Today, for the first time in, I think, over 6 months, the Elite League actually have given an output of their board meeting. And it's quite an action-packed one. There's quite a lot to get through. But the biggest news is that Guildford Flames have applied to join the Elite League next season. And I think all the signs are that application will be accepted. You've got to think if they're talking about it after the league meeting, we're going to look awful stupid if we turn around and say no. Good news for everyone other than those Cardiff Devils, Guildford Flames dual fans who are now going to have to make a decision. But other than that, Sean, you know, we only talked last week around how an 11-team league would be weird, how we should get a 12th team in, how it would be nice to have another southern team. We are like Nostradamus over here.
Well, someone in our trio also mentioned the fact that we could have a triple header in Coventry, Milton Keynes and Guildford, but, you know, I'm not going to name names, but someone did say that. It's great for the league if Guildford do join. I think having that 12 teams, just, you know, that it'll be the most that the league's ever had, I think. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it'll be the most it's ever had. It gives us another Southern team. It's a good place for us to travel. It gives us another rink to visit. It sounds terrible, but it brings the English Premier League down to, I think it's 7 teams at the moment, with Bracknell still having problems as well and all the stuff that's going on with Telford. So it gets us to 12 teams. Not saying that I wish the EPL problems, but it brings us closer to sort of unifying the two, and ultimately I'd like to think that down the line, if the EPL does sort of crumble, not that I, like I said, not that I'm saying I want it to, but we could see Basingstoke back and Telford involved and more expansion teams, and we find our way somewhere around the 15 mark, and 15 is just, you know, if we get to 15 teams, that is massive progress for the sport. To get to 12 is big, and I'm really looking forward to going there. Should they be accepted, I can't see it being any different. And we mentioned last week about the three conferences, with us being with Guildford, Milton Keynes and Coventry. You look at the amount of games that you play in conference and out of conference, and it actually brings the sort of the parity down, because you play almost as many games out of conference as you do within conference, because there's two.
You play more. Other,
yeah, you play more. So you bring
three,
down.
You play more games out.
Exactly, yeah. So you bring that parity in, but you still keep the geography almost of Braid having their local rivalries with Fife and Edinburgh. So you still get that sort of aspect into it, but I think it brings a bit more parity, and I think that genuinely would be the best way for it to go.
For me, I agree totally. It will, if it was three home, you know, three in conference, two out of conference, home and away, you've got the league parity. I think the league champion would then be a much more worthy winner, because it's been a lot more equal. I think the problem there is that you're halving, well, no, you're losing.
Yeah, you're losing. You're halving your amount of interconference games. Yeah, I can see what you're saying.
The Scottish teams have got to travel more then. They're only playing three games against all the other Scottish teams away, so their travel costs increase. Mm-hmm. From a totally selfish point of view, you are halving the number of games, home and away, we play against Belfast, Nottingham and Sheffield. And whatever happens to be the season, they're the games that I'm looking forward to. I want to see us playing Belfast, Nottingham, Sheffield, the big games. We're going to have two of those instead of four of those. And I think it's probably how it's going to end up. But that middle conference with Belfast, Sheffield and Nottingham in it is not a nice group. It's really quite a harsh group. For me, I think you'd almost want to be looking at Belfast maybe dropping down to ours, Coventry going up with Manchester, Sheffield and Nottingham. It's not so good geographically, but I think you've then got the two big teams in two, well, title challenges from this year, Sheffield and Nottingham in one group, and then break Fife up north. It just, that seems to make more sense, but you know, Cardiff, Coventry is such a big rivalry. You get a lot of travelling fans both ways. Mm-hmm. You're then losing on attendances. So it's not an easy decision to make. And of course, there are any other options.
It also gives us another massive rival in Guildford. I'm really looking forward to seeing that be reignited.
Well, yeah, I think it'd be a big rival. I think, unfortunately, with two EPL teams coming in, that
they're going to be each other's rivals. Yeah.
It's going to be Milton Keynes and Guildford will probably become... That I reckon that could get heated quite quickly, that little rivalry there. So that could be something good to watch. Aaron, what's your thoughts on it? You know, do you think we could just go back to a 12-team league, everyone plays each other the same number of times?
Yeah, it's hard. It doesn't really, to me, it doesn't really matter which way you do it, to be honest, you know. I don't know. It's just...
that as your answer, Aaron. That is absolutely fine.
I've heard, like three different ways that you could play it. 12 teams, you can have the conference split into four. You know, you can keep the two conferences, but... You know, it's at the end of the day, it's how you manage the teams, and I'd like to see the conference system stick, because it means we might be able to branch off into a better playoff tournament style thing. Like, you know, we might be able to play a 3 or 5 game series type of thing and that kind of thing. But with the league, it's just going to turn to me, it'll just be like the Premier League in football, whereas, you know, you play each other twice or three times, and that's it really, and it gets a little bit boring, and like, at least we won't have to, if that happens, at least we won't see Coventry 8 times a year, so there's a bonus there.
Mm. It's 12 if you count Challenge Cup and League. And season, but there we go. now I can maybe see the point of it.
You possibly think, Paul, that going the 6-6 might add it, but because you restore the parity by adding Belfast up north?
All the accusations that have been labelled at Brayhead for, if they win the league, it'll have an asterisk next to it because it's the easy conference. They should be walking it every year. Will be levelled at Belfast probably 4 times over because Belfast are a bigger team than Brayhead, got a bigger budget. They are consistently a better team than Brayhead. The league title should become a walk in the park for them. And I think that, for me, is the most sensible option. If Brayhead were where Brayhead you'd expected them to have been after the last couple of years, they'd have kept improving. You put so, Belfast up.
Okay. So overall, among the suggestions, you probably feel that the 3 conferences of 4 is the best way to go?
Yes, but I think I'd rather see Belfast with us than Coventry or Milton Keynes going north.
Mm-hmm.
So I think geographically, I think it might even be Milton Keynes, which is further north, just to try and have a little bit more parity in the 2 southern conferences, sorry.
Hmm.
So, that's Guildford. I would really be interested in, on top of obviously Evans Ra, my suggestions, you know, what people think of the Guildford situation, how you would like to see the league structured. Is there another option? We've talked about conferences 3-4s, 2-6s, or league. Is there something else that everyone's overlooking? And if you are, apply to be the commercial director of the league, where it's been announced. They are. I don't really think it'll be in your remit either, but hey, why not? The Elite League have also announced today that they have reopening applications for that, so you're quite interesting and good that that's on the radar for the league.
Looks like Brock Whistle will get his job after all.
Yes, Brock seems keen. Let's get him in. But in terms of things that have been brought in that's good, I think they've said that goal line technology will be in place next year, with only Brayhead and Belfast currently waiting to get the tech installed. It can only be a good thing, Sean, but you know, how many times has goal line technology been needed in a Devils game this year compared to how many times would a 4-man ref system perhaps have stopped some really nasty plays from happening?
Yeah, I do feel, though, that this year, in the fact that they should have had goal line technology and haven't, they've actually used their call judges far more than I've seen them use them ever. So
yeah, that's true.
I will, you know, I think in the absence of, you know, we've been promised goal line technology, it hasn't come in this year for whatever reason, but they've sort of made up for it by using the people who are, as you know, they're the best thing we've got to get in the right calls on the ice. And in terms of goal judges, I don't think have we seen one wrong?
Not in the Elite League. There was one ridiculous one I saw, but it was an EPL one, I think. So
I think that was actually the goal judge actually ruled it off, and the referee gave it. I think you're thinking of the game against Hull, possibly, in Milton
Keynes. Yes, Keynes, I think, wasn't it? Oh, I didn't realise he wasn't the goal judge then either. So, well done, goal judges. But I think with goal line technology, as the league's getting better, your players are getting quicker, shots are getting quicker. It's just natural that things are going to get harder and harder to see. So speaking to the goal judges more is obvious. But if you've got the goal line technology, get it in, get it done, it just makes perfect sense. And hopefully it stops all the whinging when a goal judge gives a decision or doesn't give a decision that people are not happy with.
Some woman, yeah.
But they might have some woman operating the camera and Sheffield won't be happy about that.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
And the last point that I'm not actually sure what was said, because I didn't make it all the way through the interview, Sean, so you can pick this up, but I know the TV deal was touched on as well.
Yeah, it was just I think Neil Russell mentioned that all the directors have a bit of a different opinion on it each. It's good to get the Elite League back on free to view. Long term, is Frontrunner going to be the main platform we have the Elite League? I hope not. It's something on free to air. It gets it out there. Where do I want us? I want us on BBC2. you know, I want the playoff final. I want the playoff final on BBC Two.
Yeah, but Aaron, you know, Aaron, do you think that a TV program on Front Runner TV that I'd never heard of before, is that getting the Elite League out there? Is anyone other than Elite League fans likely to tune in? If they do, is it really going to convert them?
Definitely not, no. Because one, I've not watched this, so I can't comment on the quality or the quantity of the show. But I've heard it's just highlights of the weekend's games, which that doesn't benefit new time hockey fans. Two, it's a channel. It's not a proper channel where people. The only reason you're going to get to that channel if you're not a hockey fan or know the Elite League is if you accidentally flick onto it. And if it says Elite League hockey, you're just going to skip past it because it's not interesting to people who doesn't know anything about the sport. So it doesn't benefit the Elite League, especially because they don't advertise it. Like, unless you follow the Elite League on Twitter or Facebook, that's the only time you're going to know about the Front Runner TV program. And I think that's what the downfall is advertising, because if you want a TV show like Front Runner to be positive, then you go advertise it. And I haven't seen one advert on any channel that I watch about Front Runner TV, so you're not going to watch it, are you?
Yeah, I think Front Runner is not a channel that's likely to advertise it, imagine, because I can't imagine there's a lot of budget there. But speaking of advertising, I've also not watched it, so this is, you know, going on hearsay, if you like, but tweets that there was one episode of Front Runner where the only thing that was advertised about the Elite League was webcasts. Didn't even mention going to games. And, you know, what you like want about the Sky Sports coverage, which had Dave Sims doing it, he always plugged the games. You know, he'd say, oh, Cardiff are home to Nottingham. That's going to be a massive game. Get down to the big blue tent. The atmosphere will be amazing, and he would plug games as they were discussed. So, and I just think that's what I would rather see, even if it stays on Front Runner for now, have someone talking over the top, bigging up the games, talking about the impact that this game is having on the league, try and get a bit of awareness into how it all fits together. Because just by having the commentators, you're not really ever going to get that. But one interesting,
Just pushing on that a bit. I just mentioned BBC and all that sort of thing. The Challenge Cup final was on the BBC Red Button last year, and that was, I think, a good move for the Elite League. This week, I think I was watching. I was just channel hopping. And I saw the snooker on BBC Two, and there was the option to watch live basketball. You'd think that the Elite League would. You know, you've got all these webcasts at your disposal. One webcast a week when something like the snooker is on. Give that Red Button the option. Give it to the BBC to chance it. Get something out there. Because if you're going to give it to Front Runner for free, give the BBC a live game. Your Red Button audience is bigger than Front Runner highlights, and it's a live game. Obviously, it does produce more. It does cost more to get it out there and all that sort of thing. But you're already doing it for a webcast. Does making it on TV, you know, make it really all that more impossible?
It really doesn't. But I think it goes back to the point that Neil Russell said: everyone wants something different. And I think there are owners in the league, and I think it's not a stretch to say it's going to be Neil Black and probably Tony Smith, who will think that by putting it on the Red Button, they're right, people won't buy the webcast, that's fine. If you put it on the Red Button, you lose your webcast for that game, but there we go. But they genuinely will think people will stay home and watch it. And I just think Tony Smith has been around hockey for quite a while. Neil Black has been around hockey for a long time. Surely you must realise how much better, and it's the phrase that they all use, it's better live.
It is better live.
And Brayhead had started using it. But we know it's better live. If you put a webcast in, people who can get there, who can afford to be there, will still be there because it's better live.
Yeah.
Shouldn't be something that puts you off doing a webcast. It should be why you think. Some sports, like snooker, is probably better watched on TV because you don't have to sit in silence.
Get so replays.
If they worry about it, then you can understand it, but it just makes no sense in that case. But going all the way back to the fact that they don't think the same and the fact that they're advertising for a commercial director, do you think, Sean, that they're doing it totally wrong? They should be advertising for chairman to lead the league, to make these decisions and decide and say what this is our TV strategy, this is our media strategy.
Yeah, I think so. I think you've got the positive side of the people who are running the Elite League are the people who are running the clubs, who know the game and all that sort of thing. That's great. You get the positive experience of people who run hockey teams, but you're also still in your own little world. You're not reaching for the stars, that sort of thing. You're sort of still in your own bubble, if you like. And the Elite League really does. I think it needs someone to grab it and look at. The worst thing about having all the owners take a vote on everything is that you need 8 votes and 10 different teams want 10 different things. And if the league wants to progress, that can't be the way it is. And I listened to Brock Wilson's interview with John O'Bollard over at the Cass Whiskers. I think that is what the Elite League needs. The Elite League needs some direction from someone who wants the best for the game and that will benefit all of the team, or that they feel will benefit all of the teams in some way, not just benefit Nottingham or not just benefit Sheffield, which is what Tony Smith, Neil Black, and even, you know, Todd Kelman to an extent. Todd Kelman wants what's best for the Cardiff Devils. I completely understand that. But in terms of what's best for the league, is Todd Kelman in the right position to push that while he's still trying to run a business in Cardiff? I get that he wants to grow the game and for the game to be better in the UK, but he still has to keep his business sustainable. And if that gets put at risk, he's not going to push for it. And I do genuinely think that's what the league needs. It needs some direction and it needs a neutral head to push it and put it into the next level. We talked about the Continental Cup, what it's going to hopefully do for the game. This is what we need to push it even further.
I totally agree, but I do think like someone like Brock Wilson, that's not what I would be looking for from
a
hockey player.
You
say it's not going to happen. It's probably even going to happen because of the money. But someone like Barry Hearn, that's the guy's name. Who, look what he's done to the darts. You know, totally changed the game and has made the game massive. Don't know, is it a good thing? You know, I think a lot of purists probably aren't such fans of it. He's doing the same for snooker, changing that up. You know, the FA never employ a former footballer as the chairman. They get businessmen in who've run other corporations. And I just think if we've got the budget for a commercial director, there could be a budget there for a chairman instead. And I think it just boils down 100% to the owners know that if they employ a chairman, they lose their say. They only get to vote on things that are league-wide. So something like the conferences, you would expect that to go to an owner's vote. But a media strategy, that's the chairman's job. And they've just got to sit by and suck it up. And I cannot see a time when it ever changes, when the teams all turn around and say, do you know what, I'm better off not running this because I don't know, I don't want what's best for the league, I want what's best for Sheffield. And you know, the league chairman stopping people going to away games, that's not best for the league, because that's money being taken out of all the other teams, but he thought it was best for Sheffield. I think the league is in a position where I can't see how it can be run, and it's also interesting the fact that the league is run by the league owners is the reason why Great British Ice Hockey can't have lottery funding, I believe, because it's got to be an independent body running it, which IIHF is, but I think all the confusion around it just keeps the lottery funding away, as far as I'm aware. So, yeah, sort it out. So a good board meeting, but they just need to do more, is my review on that. I think that was everything from the board meeting, Sean?
I believe so.
It probably wasn't everything, but it's everything we're going to talk about.
Everything interesting.
Everything interesting, and some bits that probably weren't, but we've talked about them anyway. This weekend, Saturday, Devils travel up to Coventry. It literally does, at the moment, feel like we're playing Coventry every single week. I can't remember the last show when we haven't either previewed or reviewed a Coventry game. It's getting ridiculous at the moment. Patrick Bordalo is due back. We didn't touch on it at the Giants game, but Gleeson Fournier is under a doctor review as we speak for a hit that I thought was probably fair, but the other guy's head hit the glass. So based on Patrick Bordalo, we'll probably be missing him for at least Coventry. Aaron, your massive character game for the Devils. You lost last weekend, lost in overtime to Coventry the week before. It's hell of a game for them. They really need to try and bounce back.
Yeah, like you said, you know, we owe Coventry one since they took that overtime win off us, and I think we need to bounce back now because we've had two overtime losses. We won in Braehead in overtime. I think we need to kick in the gear and start running in regulation at the moment. I think that's where we're lacking, is the full 60 minutes performance. So if we can go out and just absolutely dominate Coventry and put a few on them, get guys scoring like Alma, Doucette, get Jake on the scoring as well, maybe give him a bit of confidence, and you know, we could have a game against Sheffield and we can turn it all around and we could go 6-0 against them, which would be absolutely perfect. But I think without the confidence boost win against Coventry on Sunday, Saturday, I think it'll be a struggle for Saturday, Sunday. So, yeah.
Sean, Saturday, Matt, you expecting a response from Devils, or you know, is our talk about passengers just going to be the conversation of next week?
I hope not. I would like to see a reaction. I think that Andrew Lord's going to demand a reaction in the full 60 minutes. We seem to play very well in Coventry. If we do struggle in the opening period, we tend to kick it up a couple of notches. Look, we're a better team than Coventry, hands down. We have so much more talent than Coventry, and all we need to do is work as hard as them, and we'll beat them. You know, the old expression is hard work will always beat talent until talent works hard. So that's all we got to do is work hard, and we'll beat Coventry.
Oh, Sean rocking out the cliches. This is beautiful. He's you're getting it in ready for All Stars, aren't you, Sean? You know.
Yeah. Did I mention that I'm playing in All Stars?
You're a captain.
I'm a captain as well. Yeah.
Captain of a team in All Stars. You really should have mentioned this before.
Yeah. Read my tweets. Go donate. Good cause.
Me and Paul are going to be head coaches.
Yeah.
Over
my dead body.
I've put myself forward for coach for next year, so you can have it this year, Aaron. I'll try and video conference into the team to give them a little pep talk before the games. What? Massively appreciated, I'm sure. Yes, I can't remember what we were talking about before we started taking a mic out of
the Sheffield game, the preview, the Coventry game first.
We've done Coventry, I think. Are we done with Coventry? Yes.
I didn't know if you wanted to say anything.
I'd like to see a reaction. I do think we'll get a result. I don't think we'll get the performance that we want to see. I think there'll be too much of an eye. I genuinely think it's a game we could slip up on because we'll have an eye on Sunday, but I think we'll get a result probably by the odd goal, maybe even going past the 60 minutes. But I've just got a horrible feeling about Sunday. We're not going to sweep Sheffield this season. It's our last home game against them. We're not going to sweep them at home. Just going 6-0, I just cannot see it happening. Said this about going 5-0 as well, mind, against them, but we are going to lose a game against them, and I've got a horrible feeling the way we're playing at the moment.
This is the time.
Unless there's a massive turnaround.
Sheffield aren't playing that well at the moment either. You know, they had two overtime, one win, one loss. No, two wins, weren't they, actually?
I think they won by the odd goal,
1-1 in overtime.
Because they scored in the last couple of seconds. Yeah. Sorry. Carry on, Paul.
But, those two games against Coventry is also a sign that Coventry are definitely a team on the up. They beat us, got a point off Sheffield, but only lost the other one by a goal as well. So don't think they're necessarily the team that we saw earlier on in the year. But yeah, no, Sheffield, Sean, I'm not a confident bunny for Sunday. How are you feeling?
Why not? I feel like I agree with you. I don't feel like we're going to sweep Sheffield this year. I think it would be, you know, a miracle if anyone sweeps a good team as good as Sheffield this year. As for the home side of it, I'd like to think we could get a result in front of our own fans against Sheffield again. The last time they visited that shootout win?
No, they've been down since, I think. With the Josh Batch winner was the last time they were down.
Ah, right. Okay. So they've only taken the 1 point off us this year, I believe, in that game. That's the only point they've taken off us. Yeah, I think they're going to take it at least another couple more points off us. So I got to be honest with you, I think I'd settle for the point in overtime.
Yeah, I think if the game went to overtime, I'd be happy. Aaron, I take it from your comments earlier that you're confident if we can do well on Saturday.
Yeah, I think if we can get our confidence beneath us, you know, we haven't been playing well lately and confidence is low in the room at the moment. So if we can get a bit of confidence from a Trenton against Coventry, I'm sure we can get a couple of goal scorers in and hopefully do the job on Sheffield and win it. But they're one of the toughest teams you come up against this year, and nearly every time we've beat them, it's been a close game except bar one or two. So, you know, it's going to be a close game. It's going to be a fun game. It's going to be fast. It's going to be hard hitting. Might see a couple of fights. You know, as long as I see some goals in Sheffield's net, I'm happy. So, come on. Just win, please.
I'll be even happier if one of those goals in the Sheffield net comes off Davy Phillips again. But I genuinely don't care what it comes off. It can come off the referee's backside for all I care. If it's the game-winning goal, I really don't mind. That is the weekend, and another big weekend coming up, just to keep going. You know, they're all big from you.
I think you mentioned that Belfast played Nottingham on Friday as well. Is that correct?
Yeah, Belfast-Nottingham. Belfast only game of the weekend. So
that's where we gain our game back in hand, our game in hand back.
Yes. So by the end of the weekend, we'll be level on games again with Belfast. Sheffield have got Brayhead on Saturday, so Brayhead had a very poor weekend this weekend. I think losing to Caps twice. Definitely lost to Caps once. I know they lost the other game, but I'm not sure to who. So hopefully they'll have a bounce back, but I'm not going to put any faith in that. That is everything. So thank you all for listening. Please let us know your thoughts on anything we've discussed in this week's episode. And make sure you send us your Rahmite suggestions following this weekend's game. But for now, that is your Red Army Roundup. The devil inside. Every single one of us, the devil inside.